So as I said, in the second half of the evening, we're going to do a puja to Pranayaparamita. So I'd like to talk a little bit just to kind of set the scene so that when we do the puja, you have a real sense of connection with Pranayaparamita, so that the puja really feels meaningful and hopefully deep for you. So Pranayaparamita appears in the form of a wisdom goddess, but she embodies the perfection of wisdom literature, and that whole literature we're probably most familiar with in the Heart Sutra, which so we'll include the Heart Sutra in this puja that we're going to do. The perfection of wisdom literature, there are lots of texts, and some of them got extremely long. The longest was in 100,000 lines, but the shortest was in one letter. And that letter was the letter A, which in Sanskrit was a negative prefix. We get it a bit in English from the Greek, so you can say that something is atypical, which means it's not typical. Yeah. So, same going back to Sanskrit. So this perfection of wisdom all boiled down to one letter, which was this negative prefix, which meant that however you were thinking about things, whatever stories you were telling yourself, whatever concepts you were using, it isn't really like that. It kind of denies that you can ever catch reality in words and ideas. So it helps us not to get kind of lost in our stories and our ideas and our concepts about life, which as time goes on tend to get a bit tired and stale, and actually to really dive into experiencing life more and more and more deeply. That's what this whole literature, whether it was in 100,000 lines or however many, or in the Heart Sutra or in one letter, that was what it was trying to get us to do fundamentally. And there was also this basic idea of form and emptiness, emptiness and form. There was a Tibetan Buddhist teacher called the 16th Karmapa, who was the head of his school of Tibetan Buddhism. And at the end of his life, he was terminally ill, and he was in hospital in California. And one of his Western disciples came to see him, and the Western disciple was very upset because there was his teacher, and his teacher was dying. So he went in to see the Karmapa, very distressed. And Karmapa comforted him, and he did it by saying, "Okay, but nothing happens." And the Western student was a bit, "What do you mean nothing happens? We're in this hospital and you're dying." But Karmapa again said to him, "Nothing happens." So what he meant by that was that, sure, you know, all sorts of things appear, but we turn them, we take it all more seriously and as more real and as more compartmentalized and limited and turned into things that we can grasp than it actually is. Actually, life is much more flowing. It's really kind of ungraspable. So the perfection of wisdom texts say that when we really look into life, all these things that we get really concerned about and overwhelmed by and worried about, when we really go into it deeply, all that is based on our storytelling about life. It's all based on our ideas about life. It isn't based on how things actually are. So all our experience is ungraspable. Or, as it's said in the traditional text, it's all empty of any inherent existence. But then, lest we think, oh, well, in that case, nothing matters because there's nothing really there, emptiness is form. So, yes, there's nothing, but this nothing keeps on happening all the time, yeah? Out of this nothing, everything appears. You know, this wonderful kind of creative display, it's right here, yeah? So we can't sort of dismiss it. We have to open our hearts to it and engage with it, but we engage with it without making it all too fixed and heavy and being weighed down with it. And so there starts to be a kind of play where, okay, we know that, as the texts say, and everything is like a dream, like a mirage, like a magical illusion. Yeah? It's all just the play of conditions. Yeah? There's nothing we can ever get hold of. And the only problem is that we try to grasp onto it all and hold it all tight. Yeah? So we see all that. But, there's nothing there. But at the same time, there is all this richness, and we engage with that richness. So that's where that's in about 5 minutes, where the 5 minute summary of the perfection of wisdom, which sells it very short, but it's better than nothing, maybe. So that literature appeared roughly 500 years after the time of the Buddha. And there was great devotion to it because it was so freeing. Yeah. Recognizing that we need to be freed from holding on to taking our limited ideas about life as how they are, when you could start to let go of those and treat those more lightly or really look into them, then there was a whole lot of sort of liberation of energy and direct experience, which is far more fulfilling. But then over time, that whole literature, the sort of the wisdom of it, the energy of it, the richness of it, all became personified, embodied, in this image of this wisdom goddess, Pranaya Paramita, the goddess of the perfection of wisdom. And that was a huge leap in a way, because there had been, by that stage of Buddhist history, all the sort of female figures were mainly sort of nature goddesses. They were all kind of linked to nature, healing. But suddenly, this goddess appeared who was what gave birth to all Buddhas. She was the figure who gave birth to all the Buddhas, because it's seeing how things really are through the perfection of wisdom, understanding how things really are, that sets us free. So in that sense, Pranaya Paramita, the goddess, is what enables all Buddhas to become Buddhas. It's what will enable us to become Buddhas when we become Buddhas, whenever that may be. You then had this goddess of the perfection of wisdom who was absolutely at the center of this whole path to enlightenment. She embodied this absolutely crucial aspect of wisdom, of exploring experience and seeing how things were. So she was represented in quite a number of different forms, usually golden, occasionally white, And with, as is the way with these figures, sometimes with different numbers of arms symbolizing different qualities and attributes that she had. And she became associated with a whole lot of different emblems. And the shrine elves have kindly put most of the, well, all the main symbols associated with Pranayaparamita on the shrine. I'm not going to talk about all of them, but there's the lotus, which is the embodiment of receptivity, of openness. Because in order to understand something in a way, you have to really understand something, you have to stand under it. You know, you have to be kind of receptive to it. Otherwise, you're not in the right relationship to really take it into you. Then there's the book of perfect wisdom, which and it's all the wisdom of all that literature that Pranayaparamita embodies. And then there's the Vajra, the diamond thunderbolt, which is both completely immovable and dynamic, just as the nature of reality is. And there's the sword, which is also associated with Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom, which cuts off all the causes of suffering by cutting through all our wrong ideas about how things are, to come to a clear seeing, a clear understanding. And there's a mala, what we'd call in English maybe a rosary, which, because you count mantras on that, it represents continuous practice, just continuous practice through which you come to understand deeply how things are. Deep understanding doesn't come from just looking once or understanding once. Yeah. Usually that understanding doesn't really stay. You have to keep on looking again and again and look as freshly as you can at your experience. How are things? And then there's a begging bowl, which symbolizes sort of letting go of all the attachments which come out of misunderstanding the nature of things. If I feel like I'm a fixed self, well, I need all sorts of things as a fixed self to make sure I'm all right. So the begging bowls represents that sort of letting go. So the form of Pranayaparamita that we're particularly going to focus on this evening is one where she's represented not as 16 years old like a lot of the bodhisattvas. So the emphasis isn't on the freshness of experience, it's on almost kind of that sort of deep, mature knowing which just comes from having really gone deeply into experience. And she's also mature in the sense that she's the mother. She's the mother of all the Buddhas. And she's golden. She's made of golden light. So, again, she's ungraspable. You could, as it were, put your hand right through her. So there's nothing there that you can hold on to. And yet there's this beautiful appearance. So it's like we're being kind of invited with all our experience to not hold on, because that produces tension and difficulty, but to really appreciate, to really enjoy. So if we learn to do that with Pranayaparamita, then we can start to learn to do that with all our experience. Not holding on, but really appreciating. And she's making a mudra of turning the wheel of the Dharma. So it's as if she's constantly just offering the Dharma. And actually, that's true of Pranayaparamita. it's also pointing out to us that if we look deeply into the nature of any experience, if we look deeply into any moment of our life, that would really be enough. If we go far enough into it, that would show us how things are. Because every moment of our life, we'll discover that everything is flowing. Every moment of our life, we'll discover there's nothing we can really get hold of and just hold on to. The wisdom is in the flowing, the being life, rather than trying to hold on to a bit of life as if we were somehow standing outside life. That doesn't work. And also, yes, we recognize that there's tension and suffering when we try to hold on. So any moment we could see that. Right this moment, we could see that. And in these two hands with which he's constantly offering a vision of how things are, she's also holding the stems of two pale blue lotuses which open by her shoulders, and on each one there's a moon mat, and on that there's a book of perfect wisdom. And she has dark hair and a crown of jewels of the five wisdoms of the five Buddhas. So she embodies all the wisdom of all the Buddhas. And there's just one more thing to say about her, which is that when you go close up, as it were, when you look at this golden light of which her body's made, what it's made up of is endless golden Buddhas. So it's like she's like a galaxy of Buddhas. It's one wonderful image. So that's the figure that we'll be in the presence of as we do the puja. And in the puja, there are quite a few different mantras. There are several mantras associated with Pranayaparamita. So we'll be doing some of them in the puja. So there's one that you're probably familiar with from the Heart Sutra, which is Gate Gate Paragate Parasangate Bodhiswaha, which is a progressive letting go of limited ways of seeing and moving towards the farther shore of awakening, of enlightenment. It links, some people link it to the four levels of emptiness, but I think we won't go there right now. The main sense, I think, of it is that as we're reciting it, it's taking us deeper into wisdom, deeper into the heart of how things are. And then there's another one which is a kind of mantra of praise, which is actually what begins the Heart Sutra. Om Namo Bhagavachai Arya Pranya Paramitayai, which means homage to the perfection of wisdom, the blessed, the noble, or the lovely, the noble, would be another translation. So that's like just a real invocation, a calling on all that beauty, all that richness of the perfection of wisdom. And then there's a mantra which you can't really translate at all, but which goes, again, underneath the concepts. The fact that you can't actually kind of explain it in concepts takes you onto, it's not that it's meaningless, it takes you onto a level of meaning that's deeper than the rational level of meaning, which is also, in a way, what the whole puja is trying to do. Yeah, I mean, puja uses some concepts, but fundamentally, the Dharma, we can understand the Dharma rationally, But that's not going to do it for us. That's a start. You know, being convinced on that level, it's like we need to take the Dharma right into our hearts, right into, you know, feel it really sort of viscerally, and take it onto deeper levels of mind. You know, so yeah, that's why we do puja, that's why we do mantra, is to engage these deeper levels of consciousness in the whole process of moving towards awakening. So in that sense, puja is a very rational thing to do, and actually just staying on the rational level is quite an irrational thing to do if you want to gain enlightenment. Yeah. So this untranslatable mantra goes, Om Ah Dih Hung Swaha. Dih is a wisdom syllable which Pranayaparamita shares with Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. His mantra is Om Arapachana Dih. So Dih is a kind of wisdom syllable. It's a kind of quintessence of wisdom. And then there's even one more mantra in this puja that we're going to do, which is Om Swabhava Shuddha Sarvadhammaha Swabhava Shuddho Hung, which translates as something like, all phenomena are empty of any core, any inherent existence, any true nature that you can get hold of. They're all flow. Everything is flowing. Everything is alive. Everything is shifting. It's not like there's something standing behind the flow which doesn't change. No, everything is flow, which is true of us too, which means everything about us can be transformed. It's not like, you know, that bit that you feel that's sort of back here that's, you know, really sort of, you know, never going to gain enlightenment. You won't find that bit. Yeah, you can worry that it's there, but if you actually go and have a look with wisdom, it's not there. Yeah, everything about you can be transformed into enlightenment. Yeah, through that alchemy of practice, everything can be transformed into gold. Yeah. So all phenomena have no inherent existence. I too have no inherent existence. Okay, so that might be plenty. So yes, I find Pranayaparamita a very beautiful, very warm figure. I suppose that's the other thing. Wisdom, our ideas of wisdom in the West can sometimes be a bit sort of cold and surgical and clinical. You know, you sort of take a scalpel for how things are and sort of go into it. Whereas in Buddhist tradition, wisdom is really welcoming. Wisdom is kind of welcoming you home, you know, back to how things really are. And there's a real sort of warmth there that draws you on, deeper and deeper into this wonderful mystery of reality. Like a great sort of sun, you know, sort of shining and inviting you out, you know, from wherever you're sort of hiding away, out into the sunshine of real sort of freedom. So yes, Pranayaparamita will do that for us. Okay, so let's stop there, and we'll just have 5 minutes. So just to stretch your legs or do what you need to do, but really that, and then we'll carry on.